Hey, I'm CJ, a millennial. You may know me from the podcast Science with Millennials. Well, you'd be correct, but this time we're coming at you with something other than science. We're going to be utilizing Rachel's forensic science degree and my psych knowledge to bring you a podcast that will be both thrilling and chilling.
If you haven't guessed from the title, we're going to be talking about true crime. I absolutely love learning about different true crime cases and have a plethora of knowledge pent up in my brain about cases I've read about, listened to, and watched on TV. So we're going to be utilizing my forensic chemistry degree as well as CJ's psych knowledge. As a reminder, CJ doesn't know what the case is before recording the episodes, so it's a mystery for you and her. Let's open today's case file and see what's in store. Welcome to True Crime with Millennials. All right. Hello. Welcome to True Crime with Millennials. Are you ready, CJ, for me to tell you a horrible story?
I'm so pumped. I've been looking forward to this all day.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know. You're a good storyteller.
I didn't even like true crime when we started this podcast.
I know, but I like hearing you being passionate about it, so.
All right, so this was a listener-requested case. I don't know by who. CJ, you probably know. But it's the case of Jamie Kloss.
Okay, so this episode was requested by Kodak, which is actually the boyfriend of Kaylee, who has requested cases.
All right. So thank you for requesting a case. If anybody else has any cases they'd like us to cover, hit us up on Instagram or email or, you know, wherever you can message us.
All of those places.
And so we'll just jump right into it, I guess. Are you prepared?
Oh, I'm prepared. I was the one that got the request for the case, and I looked it up for 2 seconds, and then I was like, I'm gonna let her tell me.
All right, so this takes place in Barron, Wisconsin. I've never been to Wisconsin. I don't know if I ever plan on going to Wisconsin. Nothing against Wisconsin, but it's cold, and I'm not really sure what they have there other than cold.
They have cheese.
Cheese.
Good cheese.
So on October 15th, 2018, a 911 call came in from an unknown person. On the call, nobody ever spoke, to the 911 operator, but they could hear yelling in the background, and they went to call the caller back, and the voicemail gave the name of Denise Kloss. Officers then arrived at the house after being dispatched to find 56-year-old James Kloss and his wife, 46-year-old Denise Kloss, shot to death in their home with a shotgun. I don't know how many of you have seen, like, people with shotgun wounds, but I hope not a lot of you.
So both of them were killed then?
Yeah, Denise and James were both killed with a shotgun.
Okay.
So I hope not a lot of you have seen people with shotgun blasts, but it's horrific. Shotguns do so much damage, especially at, like, close range. Anyway, moving on. However, they had a 13-year-old daughter named Jamie, and I just want to say that if you have never heard of this case before, I'm sure it'll be in the title or the description, but Jamie's name is spelled J-A-Y-M-E. So I just wanted to make sure we put that out there, because it's not spelled, you know, like the normal way you would spell Jamie. But Jamie was nowhere to be found. The police quickly determined that Jamie was not a suspect in her parents' murder, and they began their search for Jamie because they believed her to be in danger. They were searching with drones and infrared scanners, but found nothing. On October 16th, so the next day, police say that Jamie is not a runaway and that they believe that she is in danger, but they do believe that she's still alive. And again, they reiterate that she's not a suspect in her parents' deaths at all. They do say that they received a tip that Jamie was spotted in Miami and that she was a runaway, but they determined that that was not credible at all. Jamie's grandfather said that she had been that her family had last seen her on Sunday at a family gathering. And the tip about Jamie potentially being in Miami was somebody saw a girl that looked kind of like Jamie in South Florida at a gas station. Although, if you're getting from Wisconsin to South Florida in a day as a 13-year-old with no money, that's some skill.
Yeah, you'd have to, like, take a plane or something, but if she doesn't have any money.
Right. So, on October 17th, so 2 days after, the police say that they believe that Jamie was in the home when her parents were killed. They believe that she was the one who called 911, potentially. There was no gun found at the scene, and police reiterate that they believe she's alive. They're not sure if this was a targeted or a random attack. And there was some drama between the media and police. There always is. When is there not?
I was going to say, when is there not? Yeah.
So on the 18th, about 100 people do a ground search for any clues or information on where Jamie might be, but they find nothing. On October 23rd, about 2,000 people do a ground search. They do find several items, but none of them ended up being linked to the case at all. Police also announced that they received tips and are searching for a red or orange Dodge Challenger and a black Ford Edge or Acura MDX. On October 24th, 2018, the FBI offers $25,000 reward, which then is doubled to $50,000 by Jeannie O. Turkey Store, which is where James and Denise both worked.
I thought it was Jenny. We've always called it Jenny O.
Oh, is it Jenny?
I don't know.
I had never heard of it before, so if you have, then I'm sure you're right.
I mean, we used to eat a lot of the turkey meats that they made from that.
But yeah, so they worked there, and the company put up another $25,000 for the reward money on any information that led to Jamie being found. Jennifer Smith is Jamie's aunt, and at this press conference announcing the reward, she spoke and basically made a speech directly to Jamie, which a lot of times police will help. We'll have family members do that in the hopes that the perpetrator will watch and it'll humanize the person that they've kidnapped or whatever and make them not hurt them, basically.
That makes sense.
It's like, you know, if you're ever in a situation where, I don't know if anybody else had to do this, but I had my mom put me in a lot of, like, what to do if you're kidnapped classes. And they always tell you to, like, humanize yourself to them and stuff like that so that they don't kill you.
We've talked about this. Your mom was just traumatizing you. I mean, it kind of helped, but it's also super traumatic.
So there was also a new forensics team that went to the Kloss home to collect more evidence. On October 27th were the parents' funerals, so Jamie was unable to be there for her parents' funerals. On October 29th, prosecutors charge a man with burglarizing the Kloss home, but say that he's not involved at all in the murders or kidnapping, which is crazy to me. Like, also, he burglarized their home on the day of the parents' funerals. He was just like, well, this seems like a good house to steal from. Like, what Great. The fuck, bro? The man was identified as 32-year-old Kyle Jenke Annis, and he was caught in the home on the day of the funeral. He said he found the house unlocked and took some of Jamie's clothes, which is, like, sus as fuck.
Yeah,
like, what the fuck?
Why wouldn't you go for, like, something expensive? Why would you go for clothes?
And a 13-year-old girl's clothes, too. You are a 32-year-old man. What the fuck, bro?
Right, that's a little fishy.
Yeah, I don't know. On December 12th, hundreds of people attended a tree lighting that was called the Tree of Hope, honor of Jamie. On January 10th, 2019, a woman walking her dog comes upon a skinny, disheveled girl wearing shoes that are way too big for her, who says that she is Jamie Kloss. The woman with the dog immediately goes to the nearest house and, like, pounds on their door. And people inside the house call 911. This does end up being Jamie. She actually is still alive and apparently doing well now. But they tried to, you know, ask her questions and offer her, like, food or water. And she declined everything. They said her demeanor was super... It seemed like she wasn't really having any sort of emotions. Do you want to, like, speak to why that might be? Like, psychologically? Because, you know, if you think about it, like, if you've just been held captive and you were kidnapped and held captive for 3 months at this point, I'd be, like, freaking the fuck out. Well, I don't know how I'd react because it's never happened to me, but I feel like I'd be freaking out, like, you know?
Yeah, but I don't know if you've heard of the story. I can't remember what case it is. It's like a big psychological case. It might be a true crime case, I'm not sure, like, as well, but it's like a girl was locked in a closet for, like, her whole life, and the whole thing was because she was more beautiful or something like that than, I don't know, we'll have to look into it, but she was locked away and she was only allowed to sleep on, like, hay or something like that, and wasn't allowed to use the bathroom or leave or see any sort of light and stuff like that. So she basically, like, regressed, and her, like, demeanor and everything about her changed, like, even her physical appearance. So things like being held captive or, like, an extreme amount of trauma can really hinder your social skills. So she might have just been, like, going through something like that and, like, you know, only being interacting with her captor, but, like, was, like, there enough to be like, hey, I need help. But at the same time, I also think that she could have been holding out for police and, like, saying everything she needed to say instead of repeating the same thing over and over again, if that makes sense.
Yeah, do you think she was also could have been in, like, shock or something, too?
Yeah, it just depends on, like, how she got released, or if she, like, escaped, or if the captor let her go.
She was able to escape. This was at 4:43 p.m., by the way. And then 11 minutes later, a suspect was arrested as Jamie's captor and the murderer of her parents. Jamie was hospitalized, but was released shortly after. She didn't seem to have any, like, lasting physical wounds, at least. So, Kristen Kasinskas was the neighbor who called 911 after the lady with the dog banged on the door and was like, "This is Jamie Kloss, call 911. She said that Jamie was quiet and her emotions were flat. And Jamie said that she didn't know where she was, because this was in a town about an hour away from where she was from. On January 11th, investigators say that the suspect is 21-year-old Jake Thomas Patterson, who has been jailed on homicide and kidnapping charges. Jamie said that she did not know him at all prior to him coming into her home, killing her parents, and abducting her.
But she, like, confirmed that it was him.
Yeah, she confirmed it was him, but said that they had never met. Like, this wasn't somebody she knew.
Gotcha.
So, during the investigation, police did find that Patterson worked at the same place as Jamie's parents for one day, but then quit. And they are pretty sure that they never interacted while they were at the plant and or at the workplace, and that he definitely never saw Jamie there. So Patterson actually shaved his head prior to committing the crimes to avoid leaving any evidence. He also had no criminal record whatsoever. He had graduated high school in 2015. Nobody had a single bad word to say about him. And he apparently saw her get on the school bus one day and just decided to take her and killed the parents strictly to abduct her.
Just like that Austin guy, like, what is with these younger men just being like, oh, there's a young child, I need to abduct them?
I don't know. To me, it seems almost crazy that there weren't any, like, warning signs at all. Like, everybody's like, no, he was great. He was sociable, like, he had tons of friends. He was in, like, clubs at school. He wasn't a loner. Like, I just, from a psychological point, I just don't get this one.
The presentation that you put on to people and the person you actually are two different things, which I'm sure you know. So right. It's like, he could have been hiding something from everyone. Like, I watched a TED Talk, this is different, but I'd watch a TED Talk about a guy who was, you know, captain of the football team, did all of these things, was the popular kid, and, you know, all of that stuff, but he talked about how he was, like, extremely depressed and, like, suicidal. But that was, like, something he hid from the world and didn't tell anyone about. So he could have had, like, premeditated thoughts about that kind of stuff.
Also, but just from a, like, criminology standpoint, like, killing two adults with a shotgun and abducting a 13-year-old is a huge leap from literally no criminal record at all. Never have, as far as I know, they didn't find any kind of, like, child pornography. I couldn't find anywhere if she was, like, sexually assaulted or anything. I'm sure that's because she's a minor, so, you know, all that stuff's probably protected. I'm sure the court sealed the records and stuff like that. But usually, at least from, like, a criminal, like, profiling, I'm not a profiler in any way, shape, or form. I'm not a psychologist. I don't know anything about anything. But generally, they don't just go from being normal, doing nothing, to killing two people and abducting a 13-year-old is just a huge leap from just living a normal life. Like, right. even if you're having these other feelings and thoughts that you're not sharing with people, that's a huge leap.
So, I found a little bit more information about the kidnapping.
Okay.
So, on October 5th, he drove to the Kloss home to kidnap Jamie. An activity in the home deterred him as he was afraid he would leave witnesses. Patterson made a second attempt 2 days later, but again aborted for the same reason. On October 15th, he made a third visit, this time armed with a shotgun, shortly before 12:53 a.m. Central Time. Patterson parked his car at the end of the driveway wearing a black coat and a ski mask. He approached the front door of the home carrying the shotgun. James Kloss shone a light on Patterson through a glass pane in the front door and asked him to show his badge. Patterson called out, "Open the effing door." Patterson fired once, fatally shooting James. Forcing his way into the house, Patterson checked every room in the house because he wanted, quote, no witnesses left behind. He found the bathroom door locked and began shooting it down. Inside the bathroom were Denise Kloss and Jamie. Denise was comforting Jamie, who was crying loudly, at 12:53 a.m. Denise made a 911 call. While Denise did not speak, the operator heard a disturbance and yelling before the phone call disconnected. When the dispatcher called the number back, they reached the voicemail of Denise Kloss, like you're saying. Patterson bound Jamie's wrists and ankles using duct tape, then fatally shot Denise Kloss. He dragged Jamie outside, almost slipping on blood, placed her in the trunk of his car, and drove away. The police arrived 4 minutes after the 911 call. That is insanely quick. Wow. Patterson later told investigators that he pulled over 20 seconds down the road from the house. Deputies sped by with emergency lights and sirens on. Neighbors said they heard two gunshots but dismissed them since Hunting was common around their homes. After arriving at his cabin, Patterson made Claus change into a different pair of pajamas, then forced her under his mattress and sealed off all exits before going to sleep. Under his mattress.
Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah.
That seems like the weirdest place you could pick to hide somebody in your house. So, Patterson believed that Jamie was too afraid of him to make any escape attempts, so he never put, like, any special locks on doors, and they slept on the same bed. He would rarely let her out of the cabin, only for brief walks on the lawn after checking for bystanders, but on January 10th, he told Klaus he was leaving for a couple hours, he put her under his bed, and boxed her inside with his belongings. But Klaus pushed the objects around the bed. She ran from the house wearing a light shirt, leggings, and a pair of Patterson sneakers.
He explains why she was wearing giant shoes.
But yeah, as soon as I saw that she was wearing huge shoes, I just assumed they were his shoes.
I just thought of clown shoes, as bad as that sounds.
After Klaus came across a local woman whose name was Jean Nutter, originally, this person didn't want their name in newspapers, but I guess they had changed their mind at some point. She recognized Klaus from the news reports and took her to the neighbor's house. After the police were called, she told them that Jake Patterson had killed her parents, taken her, and kept her prisoner just a few houses away from her current location. The neighbors said she was calm, quiet, dazed, and surprised that they recognized her from news coverage. The police arrived at 4:45 p.m. and removed her from the area for her safety. The Klaus gave a description of Patterson and his vehicle, which enabled deputies to spot the car, and a deputy stopped him. Patterson exited his vehicle and said, "I did it." The day following her escaping, the hospital released her into the custody of her aunt, Jennifer Smith. On January 24th, the Jenny O store, where her parents worked, announced that they would grant $25,000 reward money to Klaus for rescuing herself, which is cute.
I mean, cute, but also good, because she, like, lost her parents and has nothing now.
Right. But yeah.
I'm glad she's safe and, like, doing okay now, though. I mean, as okay as she can be.
Right. Yeah. For sure. There were more recent articles that were saying, you know, she's doing well, she's doing, like, she loves to dance, I think. She's doing, like, dance classes and stuff, mm-hmm. which is nice. It's nice, not that this has a happy ending, cause her parents are still dead, and, you know, she, I'm sure, is very traumatized, but, like, it's a happier ending than most true crime stories get, I guess.
It's basically she's still alive, and that's...
Yeah, there's at least one person that's still alive. What do you think about this case?
I just think that he was hiding something mentally and kind of snapped, you know? But I don't understand why he targeted her specifically. Like, yeah, I may have seen her randomly get on the bus, but also... Is he connected to that guy that was going to get her clothes? Like, what was going on with that, you know?
Yeah, I was like, what the heck?
I don't know. The whole thing just seems, like, odd.
Yeah, it seems weird to me, too.
I want to know, like, how we got this story from Austin about how, like, in-depth he went. I wish we had that from... this guy too, so it would, like, make more sense, or yeah. Like any sort of details about his life or anything like that.
So I found some more, a little bit more details about his life, I guess.
Okay.
So apparently after high school he began to isolate himself and, like, fell out of touch with all his friends. Some schoolmates apparently thought he was serving in the Marine Corps because he vowed he would be. But yeah, basically he isolated himself from everyone except immediate family, which continued until late 2018 when he had abducted Jamie Klaus.
Okay, so what do you think about people that are, like, abducting the same, like she's white. I just looked her up. And he's also white. What do you think about, like, abducting the same, like, race? Is it, like, out of character for, say, a white person to abduct a person of color, or...
So, again, I'm not, like, a sociologist or a criminologist, so I can't say any, like, statistics specifically, but I believe that it is not impossible for sure, but it's more... I believe violent crime, which I would consider this a violent crime, is typically perpetrated within the same race, like, statistically.
Gotcha.
But again, like, it's not impossible.
Also, I, like you said, he's kind of, like, isolating himself. Do you think that, like, do we know what kind of personality she has or had during that time? Because he could have just been, like, seeing... Yeah, we could have just been, like, or she could have been, like, witnessing her being, like, the popular girl or whatever.
Or, like, apparently happy. She was really quiet.
Gotcha.
So, a little more about Patterson. He was born June 17th, 1997, the youngest child of Patrick, who's an electrical supply worker, and Deborah Moyer Patterson, who was a homemaker. They married in 1989. Jake was their third child. He had an older sister named Katie and an older brother named Eric. There's not a ton known about his early childhood, but the family spent their first 8 years in a small house, or his first 8 years in a small house on 2.5 wooded acres, a rural dead-end street in the woods of Wascott, a town of fewer than 800 residents. In June 2005, one of his parents decided the marriage was broken, filing papers to seek a divorce or separation, but that case was never finalized and records of the filing aren't available. 10 months later, the family bought the house in Gordon, where Jake imprisoned Jamie, and moved 15 miles east. In October 2007, the Pattersons were back in divorce court by mutual agreement. This time it was for real. In 2008, Deborah moved to Mingong. Her husband agreed to pay $800 in child support, $40,000 for her stake in the house, and to grant her a share of his work pension and $28,000 from his profit-sharing plan. On March 31st, 2008, the marriage was legally dissolved. The children would split time between their parents' houses, switching homes every other week. When he began high school at Northwood in 2011, Patterson didn't present a memorable figure. He was just kind of there, one classmate said. His 2012 yearbook photo shows him smiling in a t-shirt with brown hair and glasses. Another said, he did keep to himself a lot, but we had no issues. He had a few close friends. The superintendent, Gene Serum, called Patterson a quiet kid and a good student. He was part of the Quiz Bowl team, which competed academically against other schools, but didn't participate in sports or other activities. He apparently read a lot. Before junior year, apparently people started noticing some changes. He began sporting a crew cut, and he started showing flashes of a temper. But, you know, he was also like a 17-year-old boy, so what were people supposed to do?
Also a child of divorce, though.
Something simple like someone throwing a ball in gym class and hitting him in the face by accident would set him off. He would cry or get really upset and whip a ball back with anger. That's the closest I'd seen to him be violent. That just sounds like a 17-year-old boy.
Yeah, I would have done the same freaking thing and be mad about it, like...
Problems began to emerge on the home front, too, and his potential support group had grown smaller. His father moved out of the house in Gordon. And with their sister already gone, it was just Jake and Eric, who was 4 years older. They were caught as teenagers siphoning gas from their neighbor's car. Jake had no legal troubles, but Eric had a few brushes with the law, who's his older brother. He had a 2013 conviction for fourth-degree sexual assault, and then a 2014 conviction for bail jumping and two felony counts of manufacturing or delivering THC. Oh no, THC.
Yeah, but if his brother was one of his role models, because if dad's not in the home, he sees that he gets a charge for sexual assault. Like, yeah, he's getting in trouble, but he also sees this is something my brother did, you know, and just could take it one step further of kidnapping.
So he graduated and skipped prom, his class trip, and the senior photo, and spoke of a plan to join the Marines. Classmates voted him most quiet. Which, if everybody in my school wasn't so busy ignoring me or bullying the shit out of me, I probably also would have been voted most quiet.
I would be angry by that award. Like, that's just rude.
Why? What's wrong with being quiet?
I just, like, always... One of the big things for me about that is, like, I was always, like, teased in school for being quiet, but it was like, I literally have nothing to say to you. That's why I was quiet. It's like, it's not because I was really shy. It was just like, I don't care enough to talk to you, you know? Like, I talk to my friends, you know, but, like, people will be like, oh, you're so quiet, you're so quiet. It's like, yeah, because I literally do not care. Do not talk to me.
I just would always read in class and stuff, which is why I never talked, because I was always just reading.
Gotcha.
Anyway, so Patterson did begin the U.S. Marine Corps basic training course in September 2015 in San Diego, but he was thrown out in week 5. He moved back to Wisconsin. In 2016, he quit a job at the turkey processing plant after one day. He then worked at a wood pellet factory in Hayward, quit after a day or two. He worked at Saputo Cheese, but only worked there for 2 days. Police said he was on his way to work at the cheese plant when he saw Jamie Kloss board a school bus in Barron and decided he'd kidnap her.
He has some issues with committing to things.
Yeah, that's kind of what I can find about his life. What do you think from that information?
I mean,
now that you have a little more information.
I don't want to go off of, like, and say he was a troubled teen that became an adult and, like, all of that, but, like, that's what it sounds like, is that he came from a hard, like, divorce situation, has a male role model that wasn't the best role model, and was probably angry, and, like, yeah, hormones are raging and stuff like that, but, like, he also was just, like, going through a lot, and then, like, I don't understand the whole, like, working a job, for, like, why would you go through the effort of getting the interview and all of that, and the paperwork, and getting hired to just, like, not keep the job? That just sounds like a lot of work, and also, like, he has some commitment issues and doesn't know what he wants to do, but then it seems like he was going after, like, Jamie, because if she was the quiet kid, and he's also was the quiet kid, that makes sense, because it's, like, a familiar personality type to him, and he probably thought, oh, that's an easy target, because she's the quiet kid, you know? But, like, I just think it wasn't, like, well thought out. Not that I want him to have it be well thought out. I feel terrible that this happened to her, but, like, seems like it was more of, like, a spur of the moment thing rather than... He seems like that type of person, though. Like, more... doesn't plan things. I can't think of the word, but... He's not consistent, I guess. Like, it doesn't sound like there's a lot of consistency in his life, and he was upset about being kicked out of, was it the Marines, you said?
Well, he was never in the Marines. He did, like, the training program, but didn't even finish that, yeah.
So yeah, it just sounds like he had a lot of, like, issues, especially with going through and following things through. Did it say why he was kicked out of the training?
It did not.
Gotcha. I wonder if he had issues with his temper then, too, and something happened.
Yeah, maybe.
Just sounds like a very...
I mean, I know in those kind of, like, training programs, like, they try to make you pissed off.
Yeah.
Which is why I couldn't do it, because I'm not good at people telling me what to do.
Right. It's just, you know, one of those cases that could have been avoided by getting someone mental health help. Or, like, at least it could have helped keep it from happening or anything like that. I don't feel bad for him, really, in any way. He still did a terrible thing, but, like, I understand some aspects of it from being, like, also a child of divorce. That really, like, when I was 17 through, like, 21, I was a wreck. Like, I, like, did a lot of things that really, I shouldn't have been doing. I didn't, like, kill anyone or kidnap anyone or anything, but, like, I was taking it out of myself a lot, and it's like, he just took it out in a different way, you know, and it doesn't make it okay, it doesn't make it right, but I understand that mental state of, like, nothing is, like, the way it was supposed to be, or, like, how you thought it was going to be, or anything like that, and it's like, he could have seen that she had, like, a happy family, and, like, the parents were together, or anything could have, like, set it off, you know?
Right, yeah.
And with him going back three times, like, the first time he heard noises in the house, second time it was, like, same thing, and then the third time he, like, basically worked up the courage to go in there and was like, oh, there's a male figure at the door, I'm going to immediately get rid of that, and then go search for the other parental figure and take that away from this kid, like, if that makes sense. That's kind of how I'm looking at it. And then, like, the whole, like, trapping her under the mattress thing seems like a really, like, immature way of going about things. Like, when a teenager is trying to hide something, like, inappropriate magazines or something like that, they're not supposed to have. They hide it under the bed or, like, in a closet or something.
Right.
It's just, like, I don't know. It's interesting. A lot of these cases that we cover where the parents are shot and the kid is, like, not hurt, it just, like, reminds me of, like, and it's been, like, males that are doing that we've covered so far. It's, like, it just reminds me that, you know, deep down these men are, like, struggling and have been struggling for a long time with a lot of different things, and they just didn't get the help that they needed, and then it just kept festering, and you can kind of tell when they're going after the parents, it's like, oh, they probably had issues with their parents, you know? Whether it be a child of divorce or abuse or things like that. It's just, I'll say over and over again, a lot of, like, our actions and behaviors stem from childhood and they just develop as we get older. Like, the root of a lot of issues are how your parents raised you. Sorry, I just went off on, like, a tangent, but...
No, it's okay. All right, well, I guess that kind of wraps up our episode on the Jamie Kloss case.
Yeah, guys, I am very passionate about mental health, if you haven't noticed. So, like, sorry if I got a little ranty there at the end, but hopefully that kind of gives you an insight as to how things can be processed, at least from what I know and have experienced, and kind of throwing, like, a personal experience in there, and, like, it's, people be hurting out here, whether they want to admit it or not. So take care of yourself, is what I'm saying.
Any hoozle. I hope you enjoyed this episode of... Which podcast is this? True Crime with Millennials?
I'm dying.
Why? Because I said any hoozle?
Yeah.
Why?
Because last time I said that, you said, did you just say any hoozle?
Okay, leave me alone. I'm autistic, okay? Anyway, so, yeah. Do you have any weird sign-offs to say?
Take care, polar bear.
All right, on that note, goodbye.